Hola a todo el mundo. Buenas tardes. Ya. Bueno, es un gran placer presentar a Gillian Mansfield, que es presidenta de CERCLE, la Confederación Europea de Centros de Lenguas, que es profesor asociada en la Universidad de Parma de Lengua Inglesa y Traducción, que montó el Centro de Lenguas de la Universidad de Palma y lo dirigió durante varios años, y que tiene intereses varios, investiga en varias áreas, como, vamos a ver cómo puede ser, un momento, sin gafas no veo nada. Bueno, análisis de discurso, pragmática, lingüística, de corpus linguistics, y otras muchas cosas. También ha creado un método de inglés online para la Universidad de Parma. Y nos va a hablar hoy de los nuevos retos, o de nuevos retos para los centros de lenguas. Gillian, adelante.
Can I stand? I prefer to stand. I don't, not that it means I'm looking down on you in any way, but I much prefer to stand also in class when I talk. I really should have prepared something thinking I talk about CERCLE being in favor of multilingualism. I should really have prepared a few words in Spanish, but I'm sorry, I haven't. I'm sorry. So I hope you will forgive me. Anyway, time is limited. I know we've started slightly later, and so I don't want to keep you too long, so I shall go straight into what I'd like to share with you today. Just one thing, thank you very, very much for inviting me here. It's really an honor to be here. It's been fantastic seeing how you're all working together, and in fact, in a way, I think I'm almost preaching to the converted in what I want to say, because you are collaborating together, you're sharing things, you're learning from each other, which is the basis of what I really want to say. So, I want to place a new emphasis on... I want to place a new emphasis on efficient ways of coping with the present hardships that we are all having to face in the field of language education. My question is not so much what the challenges are, whether they are new or not, I think a lot of them are old challenges, as how the new forms of collaboration offered by social networking can be deployed to promote a renewed interest in language centres working together for their mutual benefit to meet challenges they're all facing. To a certain extent, I tend to see this as a sort of a backwash effect from our own teaching strategies back on to ourselves by applying some of the forms of learning that we impart to our students. Thus, we can be involved in our own kind of collaborative learning from each other as language professionals, the fruits, the results and fruits of which will, in the end, offer significant value to our language programs. So, new challenges or old, some troubleshooting. If we do some troubleshooting, the long-standing problems in the area of education are as follows. First, the ever-increasing lack of human resources is more often than not due to the lack of financial resources to pay for both teaching and administrative staff. Then, funds are not always granted for acquiring some of even the basic technology and software to develop appropriate teaching and learning strategies. Problems with management systems, revolting then onto management systems. And then there is the conceptual problem of enforcing a language policy within a nation, but more specifically within our institutions, that encompasses and defends a citizen's right to achieve plurilingualism in the spirit of European unity in diversity. Internationalization must be put in the correct context. Not English and only English, whenever, wherever. Another fundamental point to take on board is the way we work, as individual language centres or a group of them. What I would like to stress is that whereas in the past many language centres felt the need to compete against each other, in an attempt to gain prestige within their own country's higher educational framework, and thus funding, it is much, much less profitable to do so nowadays. It is indeed a question of standing together, almost against the odds, to fight for recognition of a right to language learning as a vital component in anyone's life. Our human and financial resources just do not allow us now to be competitive with each other. We can achieve little if we do. As Cohn, in 1992, states that collaboration is more effective than competition as a means of promoting effective learning. So a rebalance of priorities in the face of survival needs to be addressed. In a Vygotskian framework, this theory holds fast if we see ourselves as being able to learn from each other in the professional field. Indeed, in his words, learners learn more in groups than individually. Since cooperative social interaction produces new, elaborate, advanced psychological processes that are unavailable to the organism working in isolation. Indeed, we must return to learning with and from each other for empowerment and professional richness. Another kind of constant challenge that is part of our modus operandi is the need to keep up and continue the highly professional work that we are capable of doing and that we have achieved. We have gained so much expertise to be proud of, and it must be recognised by other related institutions and associations. We should also be acting as consultants in other professional areas, well beyond our national and European boundaries. As far as Circles is concerned, the present executive is working hard to create a greater visibility for its members. Once we have completed the restructuring of our website in a more dynamic and interactive format, we will be in a better position and more credible to start knocking on doors higher up in the European echelons for the funding of language education-related projects. Keeping up the good work. First of all, let me identify one challenge put forward to Circles by one of Circles' former presidents, David Little, in the Circles academic journal, Language Learning in Higher Education, 2002, Volume 2, Number 1. An area in which we must certainly not rest on our laurels, but continue the good work. As David Little writes, and I quote him, Circles has committed itself to the CEFR and the ELP more strongly than any other professional association concerned with higher education. The Circles version of the ELP was validated and accredited as long ago as 2002 and has been translated into a number of languages, Spanish and Catalan as well, I think. And the Confederation has established the practice of organizing a major academic event on the CFR and ELP every second year. It has also been centrally involved in the development of guidelines for communicative testing at university level. What more should Circles do? In my view, it should consider developing a CFR-based language curriculum framework for the European university sector. A slimmed-down, generic version of the Circles ELP that leaves plenty of room for the addition of features appropriate to particular contexts of study and resources to support the practice of peer and self-assessment. In doing these things across national and linguistic boundaries, Circles should contribute significantly not only to the implementation of the CEFR, but also to its further development. And it could explore new ways of operationalizing the ELP, investigating the virtues and shortcomings of paper and electronic versions, and exploring ways of linking generic ICANN descriptors to particular areas of academic study. Circles could do these things because CFR and ELP-related research and development are essential if these two instruments are to thrive and evolve. And he continues, a collaborative program of research and development is the best way of adding value to Circles membership, ensuring the coherence of future CFR ELP seminars and confirming whether Circles will respond to these challenges
whether as a European association via its national affiliates or in the institutions that belong to those affiliates. Okay, it's a rather long quotation from him, but I think this is very important because Circles is recognized for its ELP and also in the focus groups. I hope that we can relaunch various aspects of it, as David has suggested here. So then we need to re-establish engagement in various forms of collaboration, such as the focus group activities, which address a number of vital issues in language learning in higher education. The contribution of focus groups brings together both younger and more experienced researchers working towards a common European cause. We must never give up the battle to assert our conviction that languages and plurilingualism are an asset in all walks of life. The next face-to-face meeting is in Barcelona from the 4th to the 5th of October, just up the road almost for many of you, when we will be taking stock of what has been achieved in some groups so far and what could be activated in the future. So I hope many of you will be joining us there. Language centres, language centres and national associations have every right to give themselves a pat on the back for the quality research they carry out in specific areas and for the quality products they obtain. We have only to think of language assessment and evaluation. National associations have produced testing models of accreditation. UNICERT in Germany, and which is implemented in Slovakia too, ICLUCERT for Italy. NUT has an inter-university test of Dutch speakers for other languages, and now the ACLES model of accreditation, which will be presented to the Circles Coordinating Committee meeting again in Barcelona in October. The testing models are precious instruments that can be used not only in the country of origin, but also in other countries in the context of Erasmus exchange, for example, and mutual recognition. The new Circles website will include a notice board, or a kind of sort of classified ads, shall I call it, where you will be able to post your requests for help, collaboration, partnership in projects, staff exchanges, and so on. Some local perspectives. Let me outline some of the particular challenges people are coping with that I've learned about not only in my position in Circles, but from also attending Circles conferences and reading all the contributions. I have the privilege of reading every contribution that comes in for the journal, so I get news up front, and you get it much later. So here I'm focusing on a local perspective concerning individual centres or national associations. First of all, the example of AULC, the UK and Irish Association of Language Centres. Their president, Peter Howarth, recently gave a talk at the ICLU conference in Foggia, where he described the state of language affairs and how members of their association are supportive of each other, as you are too. AULC comprises active members from management, teaching, technical and resources staff, so everybody in the language centre. It professes to be non-competitive, so very collegial, offering advice to members, especially smaller or newer ones, on staff contracts, technology, assessment, external examiners, resources, etc., and lobbying in the support of members under threat. And like all national Circles National Association members, it holds its annual conferences and workshops open to members of other associations. Peter highlighted another problem that many language centres face regarding their status within their institution and their relationship with academic departments. Language centres are often perceived by some modern foreign language departments as mere service providers of everyday language learning, or even a threat to the status of an academic department. However, there's no denying the fact that the teaching carried out in our language centres is based on research, and teaching practices also serve for research into all aspects of language education and methodology, student motivation, and so on. At the roots of all university language centre action, there is and there must always be a sound preparation equally deriving from research-based teaching and teaching-based research. This I got from Wilcoxon and others in 2011, that then spills over onto our learners themselves becoming involved in their own learner-based research. These authors quote a number of other scholars on this research-teaching nexus, Holbrook and Devonshire, who describe it in terms of research-informed teaching, where discipline-based research informs content, and research skills teaching, where students develop research skills. They also add a further element of research inquiry teaching when academics use research to investigate the effectiveness of teaching and learning activities, i.e. research-informed teaching. We are doing this. Good. So language, university language centres cannot simply be dismissed as a centre for language services, since they provide quality-assured language products. For example, purpose-built on- and offline courses, systems of accreditation and evaluation, alternate learning pathways, as well as efficient language centre management systems. We also have the WCL memorandum, WCL group meet every year to discuss various aspects, so which are the result of the competence and expertise of all its staff. It is an increasing reality that language centre teachers are, in general, just like academic departments of language studies, committed to inquiring and developing materials for themselves, rather than always taking ready-made commercial products as a shortcut to lesson and course preparation. As its members, whether they be teaching or technical administrative staff, must be working for a common cause, that of fostering plurilingualism within their institution. The second example I'd like to present returns to the need to collaborate rather than compete. The VESPA project in Germany, which I learned from a paper given by Jacqueline May in Foggia again recently. Jacqueline was convinced that businesses and institutions felt that they could only achieve success by defeating, destroying, dominating the competition, which was indeed itself regarded as destructive and domineering and not friendly. She equated this situation to her university in Stuttgart, which was suffering from the time-old problems of the lack of funds, staff, issues regarding responsibility for language learning at university, how to apply the framework, competition amongst the universities who ignored each other, worked against each other, offering higher salaries to attract the best lecturers. So she created what she called a VESPA, a scooter. A scooter with four seats so far, having wondered what would happen if she did invite everybody to work together or to ride on the same scooter and how this could be beneficial. Indeed, it would mean less petrol, so more money, more socialization, more communication, less boredom, less pollution, less traffic congestion, more time, more quality of life, a more livable future. So, on the initial VESPA, there were four seats for four of the universities in Stuttgart, who signed an agreement of cooperation only for language issues, but who also took part on the joint academic VESPA committee. And they quickly recognized a series of benefits. Uniform criteria for lecturer qualifications, a uniform model for lecturer remuneration, alignment of language instruction with the framework, standard number of course hours required for one framework level, standardized placement tests and compatible course models for all VESPA universities, proportional financial contributions from all VESPA universities, inclusion of VESPA objectives into the structural and developmental aims of the universities, standardized certifications, and so on. GEO hopes to add more seats to her VESPA. Other universities are welcome. These two positive examples may be of some inspiration to the following two cases, although I realize that it will be no easy task to break through the institutional barriers that include lack of foresight. So, thirdly, at the ICLU conference, Salome Papadina, who she's here, shared with us the present difficult situation of language learning in higher education in Cyprus, where the lack of funding again has a terrible knock-on effect for staff, research and student numbers, with fewer part-time teachers and increasing class capacity, reliance on volunteers and unpaid visiting professors in the seven universities in Cyprus. Indeed, collaborative support a la AULC, a la VESPA, amongst these universities would be an excellent way of sharing the burden. But Salome has the right attitude, flexibility, also the flexibility of giving and taking in negotiating, and she's thinking of creating, she's asked to create a national association of language centres. So in this, again, it's again the sharing locally and then sharing also with circles. Finally, I would like to quote a paper that has been accepted for publication in the journal regarding the state of affairs in universities belonging to the Dutch and Belgium Association, NUT, where language centres have to battle for recognition with their institutions and against a lack of consultation on their university language policy. They have no say in it. In this paper, it was claimed that language centres need to be self-supporting, although in their experience, gaining income from external sources was not always successful due to external competition, competing with them by charging less for their courses. However, the message in this paper is that while NUT advocates collaboration, there is nevertheless an underlying sense of necessary competition between language centres. But I want to now to see how we can collaborate in what I call a glocal perspective. If we can go on, yes, it is working. It's evident that with our never-failing enthusiasm to take part in European projects, that language centres from different countries willingly join together to share and develop their expertise in all kinds of language matters and at levels and all levels of expertise. Just think of some of the projects and partnerships. Circles has signed a memorandum of agreement with the European Centre of Modern Languages. We are invited to take part in their events and to give our opinion on their projects. While we are a source of dissemination of their products and activities, they are likewise for us, reciprocating by publicising our call for papers on testing for the LL, for the Language Learning in Higher Education Journal, on Facebook. I'll come back to Facebook later. The XPLIX project, exploiting internet case study and simulation templates for language learning and teaching, language teaching and learning, coordinated by former president, Circles president Johan Fischer, and developed in different languages, terminated a couple of years ago. Its partners represented a whole range of European countries and included language centres and departments from Vienna, Prague, Oulu, Navarra, Dublin, Toulouse, Padua, Wrocław, LaGuardia, Nitra, London. Just going to prove how possible and rewarding it is to engage in forms of joint ventures, drawing together the expertise of all partners. As I mentioned before, Circle's partnership role in a number of European funded projects is that of disseminator, acting globally. LinguaNet, Language Rich Europe, LATP, Lucide, mainly developing areas of research into multilingualism. Time only allows me to give you one very brief example of best practice from Circle's members in partnership. I've chosen the following example for the clear research-based teaching and teaching-based research methodology it involves. The course I'd like to present is based on collaborative course design and reported in a paper to be published in the journal. It reports on two cross-European teaching-led research projects carried out with relatively small groups of L2 English majors at the University of Leon in Spain and the University of Bielsko-Biala, Poland. The projects seek to exploit the potential afforded by new technologies to enrich L2 learning conditions and learners' learning experiences using the L2, in this case English, as a lingua franca. A small group of Spanish and Polish students worked in a formal and as near as possible real-life situation, simulating a job application process, so preparing themselves for future, maybe their future jobs. Briefly, in one country, the students devised and posted job advertisements, prepared questions for job interviews, and in the other, the students prepared job application letters, discussed possible questions that they might be asked in the job interview, discussed how to present themselves in the job interview, answer questions in the correct manner, and so on. This is an excellent example, I think, for learning for a purpose, creating many of the conditions that a person undergoes when being interviewed for a job. It is also a fine example of collaboration between two universities at a distance. We should be doing more of this. Indeed, we hope to publish more such examples either in the journal or on the Circle's website. We're going to have an area of best practice for you to to share with everybody things that you're doing. Our working perspectives. The didactic mission of language centres is surely built around the underlying spirit of unity in diversity. By their very nature, it stands to reason that language centres can only be classified as multilingual in their language policy, both within and outside their strictly institutional environment. Remembering the continual bidirectional flow of our students, for example, on Erasmus exchanges, let me briefly remind you of one of the fundamental statements in the Circle's language policy document, which again you find on the website and will be put in a prominent place on the new Circle's website. A language policy of an institution in higher education should address issues for native and foreign languages. Why? Fostering plurilingualism is a fundamental element of European higher education policy. How? By, and then you have a series of things, taking into account local specificities and language needs of all parties, actively promoting plurilingualism and institutional multilingualism, guaranteeing access to language learning facilities based in language centres, encouraging native speakers of other languages to use their own mother tongue. All right, so don't forget yourself, don't forget your own realities. Enhancing linguistic and cultural diversity and awareness, facilitating student and staff mobility, fostering lifelong language learning. The exclusive use of English as a lingua franca threatens the quality of cultural and academic exchange. I think this is very important. This statement is indeed very relevant when a policy of internationalization, with all its implications, is not thought through properly by the, dare I say, narrow-minded sometimes powers that be in higher education. Asserting multilingualism, language centres place the challenge of internationalization in a correct perspective, not an easy task when those who have the decisionary powers in a university, and this has happened in Italy with great problems, go to the extremes of demanding an English-only course for an Italian degree course, and this has caused problems. So this indeed is a challenge to us to redress the balance. I began by using the term troubleshooting, the definition of which is analysing and solving problems for an institution, and I want to share with you this mind map that actually I found from Jacqueline May, that puts into perspective how we can join forces for mutual benefit. If you focus your attention on the centre, you can see the keywords best practice, sharing ideas, communication, improvement, which then develop on all sides into a host of only positive concepts of growth, self-development, effective, efficient, rewarding, caring, and I could go on. But the main fact is the togetherness in growth and improvement. In order to face the challenges of today's world, we need to realize that we are part of a community of practice that we can make virtual by relying on the social networking for our local and global concerns. As Wenger states, communities of practice are groups of people who share a common a concern or passion for something they do and learn how to do it better as they interact regularly. That's us. And communities of practice are key to improving performance. That's what we want to do. Furthermore, Eckhart claims that a community of practice develops ways of doing things, views, values, power relations, and ways of talking. Participants in a community of practice collaborate in placing themselves in a group with respect to the world around them. Very quickly here also, there's some key words and concepts from Wenger there. Social structures, learning with and from each other, collective responsibility, a direct link between learning and performance, dynamic aspects of knowledge creation and sharing, connections, important here, connections among people across organizational and geographical boundaries without formal structures. So, the benefits of sharing and learning, referring specifically to a virtual, now I want to move on to virtual community of practice, Gannon, Leary and Fontana show how engaging in a community of practice enhances learning. They quote Johnson on the benefits of a collaborative spirit. The learning that evolved from these communities is collaborative, in which the collaborative knowledge of the community is greater than any individual knowledge. Further to this is the concept of synergy. Again from Johnson, where two or more discrete agents acting together create an effect greater than that which would be expected from the separate activities of the individual agents. So, as we say in Italian, l'unione fa la forza, or two are better than one, I think very valid there. The merits of engaging with others can also be endorsed in a Vygotskian light, according to whom a person's learning may be enhanced through engagement with others, which enables the extension of that person's capability to a newer, higher level. So we're not just joining together because we need to survive, but because it's beneficial for our professional growth. And here I've just given you an example from Wenger on the various kinds of sample activities. This wasn't specifically for language educational environment, but you can see this can all be useful, clearly adaptable to our own situation. Just if you think of the problem solving, where can I find the code to connect to the server? Or seeking experience. Has anyone dealt with a customer with a problem or with a teacher in this situation, a learning situation or something like that? And the only one that can't be done online, obviously, is the visit, which. So, language centres as virtual communities of practice. I'd like to apply the above more concretely to language centres in a local and global context. We have only to remember the VESPA project I mentioned earlier to see how a community of practice can be created on a more local level. Globally, we can start off by looking no further than circles and circles focus groups to identify subcategories of communities of practice, as well as also the EACML, the European Centre for Modern Languages, with its transnational themed projects. The focus group aims and objectives contain a number of keywords and concepts that are highly relevant to my global perspective: synergies, networking, simulating activities, and events. The Circle's language policy is the result of one focus group. It is a document that has been distributed to all national associations for consultation and implementation as each association sees fit. At present, the Circle's events management group is particularly active, preparing a checklist on event organisation that will present it to the next coordinating committee meeting in October. In 2011, a translation focus group was added to the list. The present Circle's executive wishes to add yet another on multilingualism. Here, however, I have to admit that groups tend to dwindle if there's not enough input, enough stimulation to continue, and if there is no way of keeping in touch. And this is something that needs immediate attention in circles, and that's a challenge to get it right. There are plenty of ways of staying in touch if we put our minds to it, particularly through social networking. The important thing is to establish short-term and long-term objectives for the successful running of a group. And again, we have a document there to give ideas to help people through. We can also justify working together by being virtual in more than one sense of the word. Let's scrap paper, be environmental friendly, and work digitally and virtually. This can be done in a number of simple, practically cost-free ways, some of which I regularly experiment and which I will show you in the next few slides. We may all be short of funds, but that does not mean we do not meet. Rather, we meet the challenge. Indeed, this negative situation is a stimulus to create alternative means of staying in touch. Technology and the internet have offered up a precious opportunity for a democratization, very importantly, the democratization of teaching, researching, learning, and collaboration. The Circle's executive meets on a monthly basis with Skype. I have experienced a flash meeting with the teacher training focus group where we discussed the idea of repositories. Many of us are experiencing video conferencing and Blackboard techniques. Martha and Teresa yesterday talked of their master's course at their university, where participants meet regularly and discuss with their teaching staff. They can invite guests, and I have been invited, and I would love to join because I'm doing similar sort of things, so I can gain a lot of experience, share what I do, and learn also from them. I myself have experienced, as I was saying, a teacher training course, making my students more familiar with the use of forums for discussion and thus creating an online discourse community where they shared information and helped each other. You can see there at the bottom, you can see a picture of our smiling faces where we met in our virtual classroom. One of my goals in the next year is to activate some Circle's webinars, and Martha and I talked about this morning. Their advantages: they can be limited to a relatively small group of people with a shared research interest. They avoid traveling. They maximize time we never seem to have. And they are still interactional. They give everyone the chance to take part, especially those who do not have any funds for traveling to events. As technology develops, there are a number of ways of pooling our resources, as you can see there. The teachers, as we mentioned before, the teacher education group discussed, with a flash meeting, discussed how to create repositories, but still have to meet the challenge of copyright for Circles to create one. I discovered Language Box at the AULC general meeting last January and have introduced my teacher trainer class to it. Lots and lots of ideas for lessons there in lots and lots of languages. They're free. You can pay, but there are certain sections that are free, so certainly worth it. The others, I'm sure some of these things that are here you are familiar with, and I'm certain you could add many more, but please share them. Social bookmarking, delicious. Nothing to do with food, but a very nice site that I've used. I want to share with you this and another, with two websites and software that have proved particularly useful, not only for me and my research, but also to my students. I want to present them as forms of social bookmarking and social reading, and suggest how they can be appropriate to us when communicating and collaborating together. First of all, delicious. This software allows you to collect thematically useful sites for future reference. Don't we always think, oh, I had that site, now where is it? Where did I see that? Where was that document? You can put them all using hashtags and keywords. You can have a wealth of information at your fingertips. But the plus point is that when you share your sites with others who have, is that you, You can share your sites with others who have access to your code. I was using it for my teacher training course, so I had hashtag Mansfield TFA, which was Tirocinio Formativo Attivo, the name of the course, plus various categories, listening, reading, and participants themselves were able to add their own discoveries. As the slide in the bottom right-hand corner emphasizes, the key concept, share, 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 is synergy among peers. Social Reading and Highlighter is another software that I was introduced to by a colleague who is responsible for the Moodle platform we have access to. I experimented it with my master's students as a pre-translation awareness-raising activity for possible difficulties in the translation process, or, as in the slide, a discussion on translation choices of an Italian text. They highlight a word and an expression and comment on it. Others comment too, or comment on comments. In my opinion, this software is equally useful for our shared discussion of draft documents we might need to discuss at a distance. This diagram summarizes the kinds of social networking in the form of participation frameworks with online polylogs and the repercussions they have on conversation structure. Analyzing conversation structure is problematical for news groups, which Marcoccia defines as a set of multiple conversations that can be dialogal or polylogal, but then there are problems of following, which I won't go into at the moment because time is running out. Marcoccia notes different kinds of participant roles in the participation framework of news groups. Simple readers, eavesdroppers, casual senders, and hosts. We must bear these things in mind with a view to achieving successful communication if we use social networking, whether we want to stimulate everyone to respond or whether we are satisfied that there may be a lot of eavesdroppers out there just looking in and gaining information without responding in any way. However, my particular question is, and while I'm for networking, as I've been trying to do to get us all closer together, are there too many forms of it? Are we using networking for the purpose for which it was originally invented? Can we refine its use and function according to our communicative purpose? We've already established that many language centers have to face the reality of diminishing human and financial resources. Yet I've said that physical distance is no longer a problem, even if economic resources remain so. This is the particular challenge we are capable of meeting by participating in social networking and at the same time taking inspiration from online learning and readily available forms of social networking in order to work together in virtual communities of practice. Remembering that Facebook started in an educational environment for the benefit of students on a campus, its use has now extended to an infinite number of professional contexts. Social networking is practically expected of us by our students, if we think about it. First of all, I do not tweet. I'm not a regular user of Facebook or LinkedIn, although I have jumped on the bandwagon more out of curiosity and I'm there. However, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and blogging are invading both the academic and professional spheres, and we need to identify why and how they are used with a view to recognizing their possible validity in our professional education environment. Indeed, in what way is social networking beneficial to us? To adapt a Firthian expression, are we known by the company we keep if we succumb to the attraction of Facebook and such like? I'd like to pose some more questions too and seek answers from those more informed than me. Do people use Facebook to share things about themselves for self-promotion or for general communicative purposes? So, does Facebook tell your community of practice about what you're doing, or is it some form of cry for help? And what about institutional Facebooks? Recently, a colleague from ECML, as I mentioned before, responded to my request to post a call for papers for the Circles Journal by suggesting a Facebook and Twitter as a form of dissemination. In this case, it surely reflects a kind of professional solidarity and recognition between institutions working for a common cause. Institutionally, Facebook is also a means of hearing it on the grapevine. Joynson investigates the motives and uses of Facebook and the gratifications users derive from those uses. In a study, users generated words or phrases to describe how they used and enjoyed Facebook. The factor analysis identified 7 unique uses and gratifications, as you see there: social connection, shared identities, photographs, content, social investigation, social network surfing, and status updating. While many Facebook images are invitations to enter the community, we address to express an opinion. Please note the final image, bottom right, and the comment, "Wasting people's lives since 2004. I leave it to you to tell me from your own experiences how to put it to good use. To tweet and not to tweet are forms of information diffusion, and according to Boyd and others, tweet supports a variety of communicative practices. Participants use Twitter to converse with individuals, groups, and the public at large. A particular feature of a stream of messages provided by Twitter allows individuals to be peripherally aware without directly participating, in the sense of, is there anyone out there interested? So it's more unidirectional than emailing. Information is sent out Twitter and sent on retwitter, but not necessarily expecting a reply. It is by word of mouth communication. So also in the sense of participating, in, for example, we had Twittering at London. It was quite useful to see the key concepts, the key things coming out to remind, this was on the board at the side, on the projected at the side, what was coming out, what people were noticing in the conferences. So Twitter is useful in a sense of strengthening a scientific community. Webs, and I finished with webs and weblogs. Just very quickly, the definition there, weblog is a technology that enables one to create a personal published website with great ease. Blogs, again, for that reflective practice and strengthening a scientific community. I won't say much more there, as time has run out, I think. The point of these last two slides is to suggest that we reflect more carefully on how we can tailor social networking once we have established the value of each form. A circles focus group can do that. Over to you. Challenges for the future. Okay, be virtual, act local, empower plurilingualism through websites for mass communication and other forms of networking for more personalized communication to encourage collaboration. Interpersonal communication via social networking for professional purposes, exploiting technology for collaborative purposes across geographical boundaries. A user-friendly and share-a-friendly website from Circles in the spirit of unity in diversity. Right. All this with an underlying empowerment of work based on plurilinguistic communication. Let me finish with our final challenge with something from Nelson Mandela. What I've said today is the fruit of talking and listening to people and discussing their work and experiences and the challenges they have set themselves or have to cope with, not only face to face, but virtually, PC to PC, mobile to mobile. Having to succumb to the loss of human resources is not good, but whatever the difficulties and economic constraints, the present situation we are in proves that networking strengthens ties locally and globally. And let me finish with these two quotations by Mandela, which should be a continued source of inspiration and encouragement to us all as well as a permanent challenge to ensure empowerment through the use and understanding of a person's mother tongue. Without language, one cannot talk to people and understand them. One cannot share their hopes and aspirations, grasp their history, appreciate their poetry, or savor their songs. If you talk to a man in a language, he understands, that goes to his head. If you talk to him in his language, that goes to his heart. So, this is surely an appropriate reminder to renew the challenge to focus our energies as language educators in local and global perspective in the spirit of unity and diversity. Ensuring that all languages and not the chosen one, chosen few, are accepted as an irrevocable asset to the European and global citizens.